They headed into the unknown lands where the Glowers dwelled. Two men, one a giant of a mountain man, the other molded from granite rock. The Doomsday Warrior had one thought on his mind, Kim, and the image of her burned through his brain like a branding iron. He was worried about the president as well. He knew that the death of Langford could set the Free Fighters back for another century, but his heart cried out for Kim. Never had he wanted or needed anyone so much. He had never had to worry about the fate of others. The Rock Team he cared about, every damn one of them. But they all would die. Every man knew that. But Kim, she didn't deserve to die. She was too beautiful. Woe be to any man, Russian or Glower, who harmed a hair on her head. They marched through the night, passing through the lower hills, all alive and growing with wildflowers of rainbows of color. The wind slowly sent waves of hallucinogenic ripplings, a million purples and yellows and oranges, winding and interweaving their multi-petaled fingers around the two men, lost in a spectrum of purest beauty. The cool night air was alive with swarms of bugs, moths, and darning needles as large as bottles, buzzing out their whirring drone like squadrons of dive bombers. They didn't take much interest in the two passing humans, setting their sights on the honeydew of the cupped flowers and the smaller insects that lived among them. Even the most beautiful of settings was a bloody battleground, if you were small enough to see it. Sometimes Rock wondered if the entire universe wasn't like that. A world within a world within a world, and all of them violent and murderous. All of them filled with creatures killing one another blindly with speed and madness, never ceasing, never resting. The stars ate the stars, and the bugs ate the little bugs, and man killed man, and all's right with the universe. By morning's bleary red-eyed sun, they reached the start of the vast prairie, with nuke craters spreading off in all directions. Rock didn't stop, but just kept forging ahead, lost in his own private hell. The sun blasted down on the two of them like the laser eyes of the gods. It burned everything beneath it on the high, red desert floor, raising the ground to 125 degrees.
Hold up a second, Rock.
What's the problem?
Here, take one of these.
What? What is it?
It's for the sun. The aluminum on the top reflects it and keeps it from cooking us.
Oh, it's like an umbrella for the sun.
Yeah. You just hook it on the backpack like this and instant covering.
The small aluminized coverings worked wonders in reflecting much of the sun's searing heat. Still, it was tough going. Everywhere lay the bleached bones of animals long dead. Huge skulls with horns as long as 5 feet, twisted, gnarled, horns of mutant elk and buffalo who had survived the war, but couldn't survive the heat from the lack of moisture and atmospheric covering. At one site, they passed thousands of bones of very large creatures, bigger than elephants, with one immense tusk in the middle of the head and claws on the ends of their feet. How many creatures had been spawned by the radiation of the war and already become extinct, Rock wondered. And no one would ever know. An entire cycle, birth, evolution, and death of a species in just years. Nature was working on a jag, speeding up her once harmonious processes a million times. As they were passing out of the bone graveyard, they heard a sound.
Shit.
Spy plane. Get out!
Mount Ed reached around for one of his always loaded blunderbusses. Mount Ed looked on with satisfaction, cleaning out the muzzle of his mini-cannon with a long sweep.
Got it in one? Not bad, huh?
It might have had enough time to transmit our pictures back to Control Headquarters. We'll find out soon enough.
He checked the Liberator he had found, burnt around the edges from the blast, but functional. Pulling the 50-round clip out for a second and slamming it back to make sure it was leaking. Then he opened the strap on the holster of his scorched .45. He was ready. Come hell or high water, he was ready. They had gone only another mile or so when they heard another airborne sound. Rock turned around and shaded his eyes with his palms. Transport, a big Soyuz too.
Get ready. We got company coming, and plenty of it.
Within seconds, the giant cargo plane, one of the largest in the Red Fleet, was over them. It circled in a wide sweep, and the bomb bay doors opened. Suddenly, shapes were dropping from the bottom. Commandos on parakites. The nylon glider kites with 12-foot wingspans filled the sky.
Shit, there must be 40 of them!
They circled above, catching the currents as they adjusted to the wind, yelling frantically back and forth to one another through wireless mics around their throats. They checked their 55mm machine guns, which were mounted on the front end of the engineless craft, making sure the long cartridge belts weren't jammed. Then they closed in for the kill. 40 black and gray wings dropping down like hawks, with their commander, identifiable by the white lightning bolts beneath his parakite, leading the charge. The attack squadron came in on a tight circle in waves of three, about 20 feet apart.
They're getting close. Can you hit them from here?
Not yet. Give it a few more seconds.
Hit the deck! They passed.
Yeah, but there's more coming. Looks like we can't wait for a good shot, right?
Ed, fire!
Two of the gunners died instantly. The third felt a burning pain in his guts. He reached a hand down, and it went straight through his stomach. He instantly lost control of his craft. It spun wildly and slammed into the third wave of the gunners. All of them fell to the ground below.
There's cover! A ditch about 200 yards this way! Let's go! Take this!
The punctured parakite slammed into the fifth wave coming down from above. The parakite commander, who had been the vanguard of the attack, had swung a wide circle around and was now viewing the proceedings with disgust. He began screaming over his throat mic at the rest of the men to pull up and avoid the killing entanglement at the front.
There is plenty of time. Just don't lose control. We have them.
We're almost there.
Joe!
Rock and Mount Ed made it to the ditch. They were in an ancient creek bed, long since dried up about 3 feet deep, the bottom lined with perfectly smooth pebbles and an occasional shell from days gone by.
We've got a defensible position from here.
Yeah, Rock. We'll just pick them all from here.
Your blunderbuss is ready?
I'm good.
All right. Fire!
Yeah. You okay?
Yeah. Just got my shoulder. I'll be fine.
Keep firing.
Good shot. You too!
Aim for the rightmost kite. Try and hit the right side.
Can do.
There's still at least 30 left. Ed, you're hit.
I am?
Yeah, your chin, it's bleeding.
Yeah? Oh, hey, I guess you're right. I just nicked myself shaving, Rod.
Shit. We're taking him out, but the odds are still against us. I got an idea. Pull out your aluminum tarp.
The umbrella?
Yeah, give him to me.
Here you go, Rock.
Rock smoothed out the metallic-coated cloth until it was flat. Above them, the parakites seemed to be regrouping for some new tactic their commander was screaming out orders for. Mount Ed followed Roxon's lead, not quite sure what the Doomsday Warrior had in mind. Within a few seconds, both of them had a shiny mirror-like piece of material in their hands, nearly 3 foot square. The sun bounced down off the bright material and into Mount Ed's eyes, making them squint and water.
Oh, I think I suddenly see what you got in mind.
You got it, pal. Let's give them a little more light so they can see us better.
Their commander's big move, Rock could see instantly, was to have them come in one at a time, about 50 feet apart, presumably so they wouldn't tangle each other up, as they had a penchant for doing. So much the better. They let the lead kite soar down like an eagle that had just spotted its prey until it was about 200 feet away.
Now, aim for the lead man!
The two Americans below seemed to have stopped trying to defend themselves. So much the easier to shoot. They seem to be playing with two squares of metal. What was happening? He couldn't see. Everything burning, his eyes on fire. Where was he?
course it works.
As each new kite came flying down, Rock and Knothead aimed their squares of aluminized tarp onto the red driver's face. Within a minute, they had taken out half the attack force. Broken bodies marinating in their own pools of blood littered the prairie. Their once firm and graceful parakites, now nothing but ripped and shattered pieces of garbage. The airborne commander was livid with rage.
How dare you let yourself be bested by these rebels? We will come in one long line. That way they won't be able to focus those damn mirrors or whatever they're using on us. Whichever man takes them out, he will be my second in command. Formation fire, immediately!
The parakites pulled up and around in a wide circle nearly half a mile from Rock and the Mountain Man.
Seems like they're leaving, Rock.
No, stay down. Reload. They're not gonna let us go. Not now.
The remaining parakites strung themselves out in a long line nearly a quarter mile long and came in at the commander's signal. He flew in the center of the attack, white lightning bolts painted beneath his black craft.
They're not taking any chances. They must be 1,000 feet up and fire.
We can reach him, right, Rock?
Yeah. Aim for the right flank.
Rock and Mounthead focused their mirrors up at the red death birds, trying to create confusion, panic. Rock found one man's eyes almost instantly on the right flank. He veered and slammed into the closest kite.
Rock, we won't be able to take them all out this way!
The commander! The guy in the middle with the lightning! Go for him!
They both turned their squares toward the black-helmeted leader, his parakite about 20 feet ahead of the wave.
Right then! Take careful aim and...
Ow! I can't see! I can't see!
Yeah! He's in our sights! Fire!
The headless, eviscerated body, spraying blood like a fountain from the open neck, flipped from its perch on the parakite and spun through the air, a ghastly, unrecognizable piece of mutilated meat. The rest of the death squadron suddenly panicked. They no longer had any orders. But someone quickly made a decision. The entire remaining force, just 15 of an original 40, pulled sharply up and around to the left. They turned and headed off, never looking back. Rock and Mounthead stood up, surveying the destruction they had wrought. Bodies lay everywhere, as if the birds of the sky had suddenly committed mass suicide. Each corpse lay in a spreading pool of its own blood, terribly red and bright against the hard white earth. The two Americans got their packs together and soon headed off. West. Dead west. Within minutes, vultures began circling in the pink-tinged sky. As storm clouds rumbled several miles away, their large shadows moving across the land like the face of Armageddon. The vultures slowly descended on the warm corpses, first tentatively, then furiously ripping away at the still warm flesh. Soon it became a maddening flood of the ugly gray and black carrion eaters, feasting away on the Russian birds, whose feathers had been shorn by the two solitary figures, now just dots on the shimmering horizon.
Mm. Pass me a little more of that ham, would you?
Mm-hmm.
Hold it, Ed. They're here.
The floating sail ship loomed suddenly upon them as if out of nowhere. Immense ballooning sails of the sheerest substance pulled the craft across the plains at 40 knots.
What the?
No, don't fire, Ed.
But Rock, they're gonna...
They're the reason we've come. So they do exist.
Lord. Rock, they kill with their touch.
You know, I've never heard of them killing an American. We're just gonna have to trust them.
Whoa! We're being lifted aboard.
Rock and Mount Ed were gently placed on the deck of the Glorious ship. Waiting on deck for him was a greeting committee of six of the pulsating blue creatures. Roxon was taken aback at seeing their organs and blood all pumping on the outside of their bodies, but he could sense a beauty beneath the apparent hideousness.
Greetings, Roxon.
What the hell?
There is no need for speech. Our minds can reach yours. We take you to the ones you seek, the President and Kim.
You have... You know where they are? Are they safe?
Very good, Roxon. You are a fast learner, almost as quick as Langford. Yes, they are with us. The President is clean of the poison. But Kim, she needs your help, Roxon.
How can I help? Who are you? What?
One question at a time. You can help by taking us into her mind. She has been wounded in her psyche as well as her body. She needs the force, the power of your love, the love between you, to bring her from her darkness. As to who we are who you think we are, the Glowers, as you call us. We have existed for nearly a century since the end of the war. Our ancestors manipulated our genes, cloning us to better survive in this radioactive land. They have long since died, but we have unlocked the secrets of our own genes and can evolve at will. We gather photovoltaic energy for sustenance. Our only curse is that we are unable to spawn. We are what's left. There are 43 of us. We neither breed nor die. We are one.
Why do you help us?
We have waited many years. We had chosen not to intervene, but now things change. You will be told all soon. Now we must attend to our ship. We have hours to go. You must rest. You will have much to do, Roxon. Much.
The voice stopped, and instantly the glowers split off in all directions as they adjusted the energy sails for the coming night. Rock looked up, admiring their handiwork and the towering mast that held the sail, when he realized they were actually two billowing, nearly invisible sheets. One seemed to be catching the wind, but the other, just feet behind the first, and aimed up at the rising moon and the few twinkling stars, seemed to be catching the very rays and waves coming from space. Roxon swore he could see the faintest traces of red and purple sparks running across the surface of the second sail as it trapped the very pulsations of the universe.
Damn, these creatures are strange. Ain't they, Rock?
I'm sure they mean us no harm. But God knows what sort of plans they do have in store for us.
The two Americans wandered, unchecked, up to the bow. The glowers throughout the ship made a wide berth as they came by. Obviously, there could be no physical contact between the two species. From the bow, Rock and Mount Ed watched fascinated as the ship flew through the night just feet above the surface of the wastelands they traveled across. They skimmed across dunes, across vast expanses of nothing but black cactus and rock, across fields of bomb craters that stretched for miles. To the north, they could see immense volcanic eruptions from some of the craters that had angered the Earth, making her vomit red-hot lava and toxic gas back up to the wounded surface. Far off, they could see the rivers of molten Earth undulating forward, glowing like chains of neon pearls in the black horizon. Above them, the sky put on a light show of rainbow magnetic waves, the Aurora Borealis. But out here, dropping down to the very Earth, so that the flickering curtains of the sheerest luminescence reached from the very dirt up to the farthest heavens, draping the entire terrain in a cloak of electric jewels. The ship flew right into the curtains of rippling color, and Rock could feel his hair stand on end as the static charges swept over him. It felt as if his entire body was humming with an ultra-high frequency, but no pain.
Soon, Roxon. Soon.
Rock instantly looked around, but none of the glowers were in sight. Just as the sun was beginning to claw herself back up onto the bloody battlefield of day, the glowers' village sprang into view. The ship slowed, the glowers slowly dropping the sails, the energy sail first, then the wind sail. They drifted on a few hundred yards, perfectly balanced on the great steel ball that sat beneath the ship, acting as some sort of air rudder, until they were at the very edge of the strange assortment of geodesic domes, and about 20 glowers ran over with long, flexible staffs, which they leaned against the side of the craft, somehow holding it up. With the glowers in the lead, Rock and Mount Ed followed them down a gangplank onto the reddish-colored hard earth.
Come, Roxon. There is little time.
Rock was led to the largest dome, while Mount Ed was held back by two glowers who stood in his path.
Hey! What the hell are you two think you're—
Ed, it's okay.
All right, Roxon, but I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Mount Ed sat down sullenly on the dirt, the rifle cradled across his leg. His eyes set firmly on the opaque wall through which Roxon had just disappeared. He squinted his eyes in deep concentration.
Better not mess with my little friend there.
Inside the large dome, Rock stopped dead in his tracks. There, lying naked on the ground in the center of some bizarre painting, was Kim. And several feet away, seated cross-legged, was one of the glowers, this one of a distinctly purplish hue. Rock rushed toward the woman he loved, tears springing to his eyes as he saw how burnt her face and flesh were, her hair falling out, her eyes swollen shut. She barely breathed, her chest rising imperceptibly. She seemed cold, very cold. He raised his hand to gently touch her face.
Do not touch her, Roxon!
I'm sorry to use such force, but you cannot touch her now. She is very hurt.
What can I... we do?
You can help her, Roxon. There are ways. But first you must cleanse yourself. Become as pure as you are capable of being. We know you are a man of good heart. A man of meditation and inner purity. Go to the Sun Source now, Roxon. Cleanse yourself. Then we may begin. Come back in 2 of your hours.
The turquoise-colored glower faded to a dull shine, remaining motionless. Rock walked outside, not looking at Kim. He understood. There was to be a battle, but not of men or guns or knives. A battle of souls, for her soul. And Roxon was going to be the one who would have to do battle.